page 39, top. Even so, those who claim to have studied for a long time, for 20 or 30 years, pass their whole life in days when they read or hear talk of the nature of things. Those who claim to have fulfilled Zen study and assume the rank of teacher, while they hear the voice of the nature of things and see the forms of the nature of things, yet their body and mind, objective and subjective experience, always just rise and fall in the pit of confusion. What this is like is wrongly thinking that the nature of things will appear when the whole world we perceive is obliterated, that the nature of things is not the present totality of phenomena. The principle of the nature of things cannot be like this. The totality of phenomena and the nature of things are far beyond any question of sameness or difference, beyond talk of distinction or identity. It is not past, present, or future, not annihilation or eternity, not form, sensation, conception, conditioning, or consciousness. Therefore, it is nature of things. Okay. The last time, Dogen Zenji mentions, if you are not born knowing, you couldn't hear of the nature of things, you couldn't witness the nature of things, because the Buddha way or the truth is not something experience of drinking water. this is Dogen Zenji mentions the last time, the paragraph in the section we learned the last time. So I think before you experience of drinking water, there is a truth. That truth is really something alive, vivid, refresh, very fresh. So, but this is, that is that truth. Before you experience of drinking water, there is a truth which causes the water person and experience of drinking water are many things to exist at the same time. That truth is not abstract. It is something vivid, like a living fish. But through the perception, we cannot see it. That's why not born knowledge. We cannot know, because that truth is very close without creating gap between we and truth. That's why unborn knowledge or knowledge of birthlessness, which Dogen Zenjima mentioned in the English version, in Japanese, Musho Chi, unborn. Musho means not alive, not born. Musho Chi, or Sho Chi. Sho Chi means born knowledge, which is something alive, vivid. So, I think we should, that is that truth which is alive vividly, always exist with us, regardless of whether you experience or you don't experience. That is so-called born knowledge. That is the truth. Then when you realize it, we call born knowledge. Okay? Born knowledge. Is that clear? So, I think many people misunderstand the Buddhism, Zen Buddhism. Teaching of that people believe that Zen teaching is to have a direct experience of drinking water. If you want to know what to drink in water, instead of researching water, what the water is like, or regardless of whether you discuss about water. But I think it is not the real Zen teaching. I think you have to realize something vivid. Something vivid, you experience something before you experience something. So Zen master in Japan said, Zen Buddhism is to do something before you risk your life. You risk your life means if you risk your life to do something, you always jump into the water, oceans, and then get to the direct experience, always you experience before you discuss. So that is, if you have really great spirit that you want to risk your life to do something, you always do it. You're very active. But it is not Zen. So he says to do, we have to do something prior to risk your life. Risk your life to do something. So he says that that is really graceful and elegant. Elegant behavior. Elegant things we have to do. So that is a Dogen Zenji mentions here. Okay? Is that clear? Do you know the can't you feel the meaning of born knowing and then teaching is not the experience of drinking water? Okay. Is that clear? If you have a question, ask me now. Otherwise, next, Dogen Zenji mentions it is only eating breakfast, eating lunch, and having a snack. You don't understand that one. Because truth is exactly with us. Okay? How is it? How is it existent with us? Okay? Same thing. Same thing.
But it's not drinking water.
Drinking water means eating at the breakfast, eating lunch, having a snack is not something seen from human eyes in terms of oneness of the phenomena and the truth, human life and truth. Anyway, this is a very important point. We have to taste the oneness of the phenomena and the truth. This is, in a sense, it seems to be easy to understand, but not so easy to taste it. So I think most, that's why next, the Dogen Zenji mentions, no matter how many years you study the Buddhism and the practice Buddhism and talk about Dharma, but still you live your life, in the days. In other words, you spent your life carelessly, wastefully. So most of people do this one, and it's very difficult to understand. If we say so, we don't understand the oneness of the truth and the phenomena. But in terms of teaching as a Buddhology, we can't understand. We seem to understand it. But actually, if you put it into practice, we are completely confused. We don't know how to do it. So that's Dogen Zenji mentions here. Okay. So drinking water and eating breakfast is same, okay, in a sense. But here Dogen Zenji say eating breakfast, eating lunch is simultaneously, this is born knowledge. So it, and that behavior, that action must be based on born knowledge. Okay. But if you think experience of drinking water, experience of eating breakfast is then teaching. At that time, eating breakfast is based on usual human sense. In other words, based on the functioning of the six senses. That's it. That is, first of all, you have to realize what the truth is, okay? Truth is not abstract, separate from us, so Dogen Zenji constantly mention here. So, our life, through five skandhas, are exactly truth as it is, okay? That is first. You have to really accept your five skandhas as truth, as a Buddha. Okay? You have to stand up straightly there. That's why in Zen Kaisho precept in Zen, I think the Dogen Zenji mentions here the very interesting point. You know, the precept refers to restraint and extermination. Shakyamuni Buddha, who started sitting in Zazen under the Bodhi tree, ended in attainment of enlightenment and the establishment of the precept. This is named restraint. It means to come to a stop in the truth that I and all beings on the great earth, both simultaneously attain enlightenment together. So we have to come stop in the truth. Okay? In other words, you have to keep standing in the truth that I and all sentient beings attain enlightenment together simultaneously. That means your five skandhas are
nothing but the Dhamma container, Buddha nature. So don't waste your body. Don't deal with your body carelessly. So this is a one point, okay? And then the second, I think that the Dogen Zenji mentions about the precept, if you keep standing in the truth that I and all sentient beings attain simultaneously enlightenment together, and then naturally that means restraining, or naturally you can practice prevention of false and the cessation of evil. Okay? That is called restraint. Restraint, he mentions. So in terms of moral sense, we always accept us first. We are not Buddha. We are really misery or suffering deluded. So that's why we have to keep away from three words. In order to this, we have to have a precept. That is the first, okay? This is common. So that understanding is really based on dualistic, okay? Dualistic. But on the other hand, the Dogen Zenji mentions and ancestors Buddhist mentions are that we keep standing right in the middle of truth, okay? That we and all sentient beings are simultaneously Buddha, truth. We have to stand up there. Means, Karagi, whatever I feel, Karagi is Buddha. Tracy is Buddha. Later, I think Dogen Zenji mentions about the definition of the Dhamma nature and the totality of phenomena, myriad Dhamma. Okay? So very clearly he mentions the last paragraph of the last sentence of the paragraph I have read. Okay? He mentions here the totality of phenomena and the nature of things are far beyond any question of sameness or difference, beyond the talk of distinction or identity itself. Okay? So we have to keep standing there, and then naturally precept coming up there. Because the truth, so-called unity of the phenomena, your five standards and the truth, okay, is very pure, undefiled. So your five standards are very undefiled. In other words, your five standards has great power to be liberated from the conception, perception of five skandhas you have had. But through our six senses, we don't see it. But strictly speaking, five skandhas possesses the great power to cause those five skandhas to liberate them, naturally. That's why we can survive, we can help, we can do something wholesome anyway. So I think if you stand up in the truth, in other words, accepting five standards as a Buddha, then practice coming up naturally, because Buddha you have accepted is very undefiled. So you cannot poke your desire into it, even slightly. If you do it, it's no longer Buddha. So very naturally, if you keep standing there, naturally, you can practice prevention of falls, cessation of evil, naturally, because Buddha is very undefiled. So all you, that undefiled practice, where is undefiled practice? That is a question. Okay. Undefiled practice is exactly in the process of the practice. Okay. Exactly in the flow of practice. Okay. Continuous flow of practice. So it is moving vividly, concentrate. That at that time, we can practice the Buddha way. Okay. So, before you risk your life to do something, there is something we have to do. This is a Buddha's practice. Okay? Buddha's practice. So first of all, we have to understand that what the truth is like. Truth is not separate from us. If you think that, very naturally our practice becomes based on the dualistic sense, morality, moral sense. Okay? So you are not good, so you have to practice. You know, by practice, you can reach the Buddha nature itself. Okay? But Buddhas and ancestors mentions we are already Buddha. If so, we should accept five skandhas as a Buddha. Anyway, how? This is very humble, elegant and graceful practice. Okay. How do you take care of your five skandhas? Okay. Don't judge your five skandhas in terms of your feeling. Anyway, you have to deal with your five skandhas as a Buddha. But we don't know how to deal. That's why we have to listen to Buddha's teaching and we need a guidance. Something like that. And also we need a practice. That is a zazen itself. That is elegant, what we call undefiled practice. Okay? About that, do you... But still out there, I'm not satisfied.
Eating lunch is, eating lunch doesn't happen without me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm eating it, it's not lunch. So I have to be there for eating lunch to happen. But it's not the same as if I then experience it as I'm eating lunch, and that's not eating lunch.
Well, I think separation there. The separation, if you say, I am eating lunch, that I and the meat there, meal there, always dualistic. Okay? So I think elegant practice, before you risk your life to eat the breakfast, is that there is to deal with the eating as it really is, which subject eater is absorbed into meals. Okay? So there is no dualistic sense. Food eat food, I eat I. Something like that, very naturally.
Can I move this point of view? For example, if anyone knows this word, they know to eat that apple. That apple is not food.
Beg your pardon?
from this point of view, or from the point of the Dharma nature, if anyone, everyone from this world, they not eat half food, one food, this food, no food.
What do you mean, What does it mean?
ではいい。誰も食べない食べ物は食べ物じゃない。誰も食べない food は food ではないのかというあんたの question?
You mean the food? Food doesn't become the, your object. In other words, the object food doesn't become when the food doesn't become object of your eating. That's what you mean.
Change the example. If here is a teacher and a student, if this teacher has no student, I think this teacher is no teacher.
So that's why the food you are eating, food which you are not eating, all of food. Okay? Because in turn food must be the being, not creature you are facing. Okay? Food is not the something produced by somebody. Food is being in terms of universal perspective, in terms of the same and one ground. So it is a being.
But food is not substance.
Food is not substance or object anyway. It is a being. Okay? So even though you are eating or you are not eating, food is food.
But that being is a duration.
Of course it is. Of course. Being cannot be existent without relations with all sentient beings. Very naturally, there are interconnection, interpenetrations. That's why temporarily we say being.
This paragraph is so.
Sure, that's true. Based on that one. Okay? So eating is eating. You eat, and that time your practice becomes very undefined, elegant. Okay? And I eat, and that time your practice becomes very elegant. Okay? It's not risking your life. All right? You should taste it, this one. You should digest this. Expression is a little bit far from usual sense, but. If you see that you, food, nature, birds, simultaneously all existent, where? In the same and one ground. Before you think or you don't think, you understand this one, okay? In terms of that situation, in terms of that state of existence, you have to deal with your food, okay? So, your food and you are same. What's the difference? So, when you eat a meal, so you are not eating meal. Meal, eating a meal. Because meal exists as a being, as well as you exist. So, from this point of view, meal eats meal. Exactly. All right.
You are you.
Yes.
You are not eating.
You are absorbed into eating. Okay. So you are not appeared. You don't appear on the surface. but you become a qualified, you become a quality of meal.
Mm-hmm. Really makes it a clear distinction.
Right, I understand.
But you can also use the same if you say, I am eating the food. And that's actually the same as saying, I am eating the food. I'm eating the food and I
sure.
are the same.
I am eating the meal.
I am. What am I? I am
eating the meal. Food. It is the same as what?
I eat the meal,
you
know, I take this meal and I do something to
it,
but if I say I am eating
the
meal, it is the same.
I
means
I am, that's what I am,
I am
eating the meal.
Uh-huh.
I eat the meal.
Now that means that they're oneness.
Oh. It doesn't ordinarily, we don't think of it that way, we think of it more in terms of I eat the meal.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But if you say I am eating a meal, that is exactly what? Oh, I see. That's what you mean. Well, still, in terms of language, still there is a dualistic sense there. But anyway, as best as we can, we try to express that oneness seen through the words. That is our effort, anyway. Right, that's true. Eating. That is exactly undefiled practice there. When you see your life in terms of the same and functioning of the same on one ground, exactly you can say. That's why Dogen Zenji mentions pine trees transmit pine tree, karagi transmit karagis. And also here says, in this chapter says, you know, you can attain enlightenment with that teacher. That is same meaning. Okay. Oh, okay. Do you have a question?
When I am eating a food, when I am eating a food,
mm-hmm.
I become I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At that time, you and the eating is not separate. Food is not separate, okay? You are occupied in the, by the whole world. You exist in the whole world. That is, you eat you. No, if you eat, exactly, eating. So
just eating, not you.
Not you.
Because eating.
No food, no you. That's why Prajnaparamita says no food, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue. Why do you say so? You know?
What I understand for a word, any word is just a conventional word.
Word. What?
Like if I say man,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what man means,
mm-hmm.
but it's just a conventional way of saying man to you, so you understand something that I don't know.
Sure.
What it is. Nobody knows.
Sure.
But everybody uses it as a convention.
Sure.
So discussing about all these conventionalism, I don't know what it means.
Well, but yeah, whatever you think, and you know, word is habitual or conventional or whatever you say. Without word, we cannot exist in this world. So we cannot communicate. We cannot know. We cannot know that what the truth is. So that's why we try to use carefully the language, word, whatever you think. It is habitual or conventional, whatever you say. It's necessary for us because word, language are Buddha. So how do we use, how do we deal with the language in order to express the truth or Buddha nature? Okay?
Can the truth be expressed in words?
Sure, the truth. That's why we do.
Is that the truth, whether it is expressed in words?
Sure.
Or the truth is beyond words?
Word? If you use a word, it's not truth, but within the word, there is a truth. That's why the Rinzai says, five skandhas are no longer five, they're truth. But within the truth, within the five skandhas, there is a truth.
Well, you could say that within anything and everything.
Sure, everything. Everywhere. That's why in the last sentence, it mentioned definition of Dharma natures, Dharma nature and phenomena. I will explain later. It's a very interesting point, anyway. So whatever it is, all are Buddha nature, anyway. Means all have great power or force to be liberated by themselves. So life, that's why Dogen Zen says in the chapter of life and death, life emancipate life. Death emancipate death. But we usually think of death or life in terms of six senses, dualistic sense. So we never see death, so state, true state of a death which emancipate death by itself. No, we don't see it. We always think of death is something burden, opposite to life. Okay? At that time, death is not the Buddha. We cannot accept. It's hard to accept death. But he said, Buddha says death is. Death is great power, great powerful, and to be liberated by itself. Anyway. So that's why emancipation. Everything is, anyway, great power of, has a great power of emancipation, liberation. Nose, ears, mouth, five skandhas. So we think if I see Karagiri, all five skandhas are not completely acceptable by me because I judge always according to my customs, my educations, and the heredities. So that is pretty hard to accept totally five skandhas as a Buddha. Okay? But on the other hand, if I make my mind calm, well, five skandhas is what? Still, with this five skandhas, I can do zazen right now. I can move toward the Buddha's life. I can walk step by step on the path of Buddha way.
Isn't that joshin?
Joshin?
Judge.
No. It's not judge. It's not judging.
Oh,
in a sense, this is beyond the usual judgment. Beyond the usual judgment. There is a great judgment that is born knowing, we say. Okay? Great judgment. We have. That is a wisdom, we say. But if you use the term wisdom, wisdom is kind of mysterious, inconceivable, or mysterious and wondrous, or where is the wisdom? We say so. But we have. Anyway, we have. Even though I mention always, there is a, can't you feel? If I say to you, can't you feel the something the same in the one ground in this area? Where is the all sentient beings are completely accepted simultaneously at a moment? You can feel. That is called truth or universe, we can see. So that's the kind of knowledge we have. So that is called wisdom. Okay? And then by that wisdom, we can, anyway, judge. But that judgment is not usual sense of judgment, created, fabricated by the human, the conventional lifestyle. Okay?
Well, see, but that conventional lifestyle and that usual judgment, isn't that Buddha also?
Oh, sure, Buddha. Yes, it is. So that's why through the conventional lifestyle of human being, you have to see something beyond this one. Beyond doesn't mean jump over. Okay? Passing through, going through that conventional lifestyle, you have to see something profound anyway.
So what is the use of seeing profound? Anything in the Buddha, whether it's profound or not profound?
Yeah, that is already there, see? That is already you already poke your head into the Buddha, which is pure, undefiled. We are already Buddha. Why we have to realize it? We have to always see that something profound. That is only our desires, our consciousness, only we poke ahead into it. By that time, Buddha is no longer undefiled. It's stored up by your senses. Do you understand? All of you. That is the obvious question coming. If we are Buddha, why we have to practice that? If we are Buddha, they improved by the Buddha Shakyamuni 2500 years ago. Why we have to practice it generation after generation? Why? This is already our speculation. Is poked into that Buddhist world. Buddhist world is completely beyond you. Whether or not you poke your head into it, Buddha is Buddha. So we have to deal with five standards and the Buddha. That is real, you know. That's why the more you try to stand up in the Buddhist world, the more you can see that kind of minute vibration of consciousness over there. Immediately you think, why we have to practice? Something like that. So very naturally, Buddha mentions, stop it. You know, that is so-called practice. Prevention of a fall. Something like that. You know? So precept is meaning of prevention of falls and cessation of the evil. Something like that, we can say. But this is not dualistic sense, this is not the moral sense, because it is coming up from the Buddhist world naturally. If you keep standing in the Buddhist world, very naturally it's coming up. Because very naturally you can see how minutely your consciousness operates, exercised constantly. So it's very difficult to keep your desires undefiled. That's why we have to do zazen, make your mind calm and anyway, make your mind clear and sit down again and again. Otherwise, your consciousness, your desire, your emotions are always coming up and then you're confused. Can't stumble off. So you have to, if confusion is Buddha, you cannot escape it. You cannot attach to it. You have to totally accept confusion as a Buddha and deal with the confusion, okay? Well, in the world, it seems to be easy, but when you start to deal with the confusion, you cannot stand up the Buddha's word. Because you are stumbled, you are caused away by confusion. So that's why constantly you have to stand up in the Buddha's world, accepting confusion as it is, exactly, anyway. And then next, start to deal with confusions. But that is hardest practice for us. That's when naturally there is a precept coming up. Okay? Is that clear? Buddhist practice is some exactly that.
Yes.
Well, the,
I mean, whether we just go on and on.
Yeah, on and on. Yes, it is. But I think the main point you have to, even though you don't understand that, what is the Buddhist main point of the Buddhist teaching? Okay. Buddhist teaching is not dualistic teaching. Anyway, non-dualistic teaching, that is a most difficult point for us to understand it. But this is real too. Otherwise, Buddhism becomes the same things as other and other things in the circle of physics and some philosophy, psychology, etc. So why do you practice like this particularly? It's not so if Buddhism is same as others. I don't think it is not necessary for you to practice like this in order to seek the truth.
What about if somebody practices not because he's seeking the truth or not because he has some teachings or somebody's telling him, but only for an internal urge to do it, not knowing why or not with any desire, nothing. It's just like if somebody pushes you underwater,
mm-hmm.
you have an urge to go out and breathe.
Yeah, sure.
The same reason. You don't even know why or
well, sometimes
you ignorance, you don't know where you're going, where you're coming from. But you have that urge and that's why you practice.
Yeah, that is called ignorance. Why we do that like that. Why that there are many beings who don't know, who don't pay attention anyway the Buddha natures and the truth, etc. Why there are many people who push you down into the water anyway, carelessly, something like that. That's what you mean?
No, what I mean is that some people practice not because they want to attain anything, but it's only a natural desire or natural internal urge to do it.
Oh.
It's like breathing or like eating or like sleeping or like cheating.
Mm-hmm. If it has become natural, that's great for you.
It's not because you want to seek for the truth, but you already gave up seeking for the truth.
Mm-hmm. You give up seeking for truth?
Well, truth is everything, so why seeking for it?
Well, I think seeking is, the term seeking is already you see the truth, your object. But the religious practice is not seeking for it, but to manifest the truth in your everyday life. This is the so-called seeking for the truth. If you say seeking for the truth, obviously you see the truth objectively. But a Buddhistic sense, seeking for the truth is to manifest the truth through five skandhas. Through your everyday life, anyone manifest. This is a seeking.
Is there anything that is not the truth?
All the truth, anyway. Without exceptions. Everything is truth.
Anyway, we seek for it.
Well, seek for it is a manifest, anyway. Okay? But it's not so easy. That's why, how do we manifest the truth. That's why at that time we say we have to seek for the truth. Is that clear? Truth is always all of truth. So it's not necessary to seek for because truth is with us. So next, if you believe so, anyway, let's manifest it. Because if you have the mature information about the human life and you know the technologies and some technology, etc. You can't always keep it inside. If you have something mature knowledge, mature information, naturally it's coming up. Okay. So if it same apply to the truth. Truth is always with us. You cannot keep it inside. Because truth is always something functioning. So very naturally, it's coming up from your five skandhas. So next, how do we manifest? That is question. But it's so easy because you must be natural. And that time, it's coming up. But what is a natural, practically speaking? Your body is natural. Your consciousnesses are natural. Right now, right here, you can say yes or no because your consciousness is already connected with heredity and your educations and habitual, you know, pattern of life and lifestyle, etc. So it's a very complicated situation coming up. You have, in order to manifest the truth, you have to go through the very complicated procedure, like a rock climbing. At that time, your body shouldn't be confused, but usually we are very confused. Okay? That's why at that time, how do we manifest the truth? So constantly we have to seek it. How? From this point, you can say we have to seek for the truth. But that seeking for the truth comes from the manifesting of truth, effort of the manifesting your truth in your everyday life. Okay? And then seeking for the truth coming up. Do you clear? Never mind. Okay.
How can you tell if you're manifesting truth or if you're manifesting ego? I mean, can I see the difference?
Yeah, the ego is also truth, and so it's not necessary, and hate and or love it, and it's not necessary. So ego is, but usually we say ego is bad. So we have already preconception about the ego. At that time, you cannot deal with the ego as the Buddha, so very naturally you deal with the ego, you know, badly, you know, opposed to the something good. So that is already you fall into the pit of confusion already. So ego manifests constantly, but ego is also Buddha and the truth. If so, don't act on ego immediately in terms of your judgment, evaluation of the, or in terms of your emotions itself. Accept totally egos. And then ego hurt you and others. Okay? So at that time you can see that is temporary so-called ego. So you can deal with this one. Is that?
And what you said makes sense, but I still don't see, you know, if there's any difference.
Difference what? Between what?
Manifesting the truth and manifesting the ego and law. It's all the same.
Oh, not same. When you manifest something, it is already different. Different from the truth. If you manifest the truth in your everyday life, it is a different from the real truth. Okay, but it is truth. Okay, but it is not truth because it is already secular truth. It is already form of the truth by you. So from this point, that the secular form of the truth manifested by you and form of ego are different, completely different. But in terms of real truth, behind the form of the truth, form of the ego and truth are same. Okay? So that's why I'm talking about ego in terms of that real truth.
Okay, but you also said sometimes we shouldn't be so egotistic.
Right.
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 So there must be
Yeah, quite different, quite different. That's why I say the truth and the ego are complete different, quite different. Because if you manifest the ego, very much it influences you and others and hurting something anyway, interrupting very much.
So you can tell when you manifest the ego when something doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't. But sometimes you feel right.
What can I do?
Yeah, that's why at that time you should accept your feelings. You're feeling right, you know. Don't attach, don't hang on anyway. Yeah, just the feeling right. Wow, pretty good, you know. For instance, if you do that, then exactly right in the middle of samadhi of zazen, you feel right, don't you think so? Yeah, this is so I'm pretty good student. But this is nothing but the dregs of time anyway. So we have to always, that's why we, whatever you feel, right or wrong, anyway, we have to accept that all things, anyway, as a Buddhist, in terms of the real truth, okay? And then naturally, later, you can see what is the ego, what is the truth, you know? Not right away, yes. That is what you can do. Not right away. It's slow, but not right away anyway. But sometimes so you have to do something right now, okay? But I think, I don't mean so you should act on your ego. Right now means in terms of your emotion, in terms of your habitual pattern of life. Because your habitual pattern is already rooted very strongly in your life. So even though you understand the intellectually, your behavior is immediately coming up. So that's why practice is not so easy for us. That's why we have to talk about, we have to listen to Buddhist world anyway. Any other questions? Okay, this chapter is a paragraph. Let me read. Even so, those who claim to have studied for a long time, for 20 or 30 years, pass their whole life in days when they read or hear talk of the nature of things. Even though for a long time you study the Buddhism, you understand the oneness of the phenomena and the truth, but still you spend your life, you know, wastefully. So that means, he says, you pass your whole life in days. Okay. That is very common, very common. And those who claim to have fulfilled Zen study and assume the rank of teacher, while they hear the voice of nature of things and see the form of the nature of things, yet their body and mind, objective and subjective experience, always just arise, fall into in the pit of confusion. Means still they are talking about unity or oneness in dualistic point of view. So they don't realize this one. But they say, I am a person who fulfills anyway Zen practice, and I have a certain position of Zen teachers, then I have to have the responsibility to teach. But no matter how long you teach, the unity of the phenomenon and the truth, still, there are many teachers who don't understand unity, perfect unity of the phenomena and truth. I don't know how many teachers who are completely qualified to teach that oneness exactly. I don't know. That's why they've invented masons here. This is a very strong criticism toward the teacher. Anyway. Not now. Even in the ancient time, such a cases always happens. So, that's why they've invented masons here. So, their body and mind, objective and the subjective experience, always there is your body and mind, five skandhas, and then the object of your five skandhas, always set dualistic sense there. And then we have to reach something, a certain stage of spiritual life. So, finally, always, they always just rise and fall in the pit of confusion. Finally, we don't know. What is real Buddhist practice? We don't know. Very confusion. For instance, precept. Meaning of precept is really confusion. Teacher doesn't know. So what this is like is wrongly thinking that the nature of things will appear when the whole world we perceive is obliterated. That the nature of things is not the present totality of phenomena. So, very naturally, they're dualistic. People say, we are not Buddha nature. We are not Buddha. So you have to reach a certain stage, so-called nirvana, enlightenment by the practice. Of course, we know we are Buddha. But you are not Buddha now. Your Buddha nature is clouded by clouds, covered with the clouds. That's why you have to wipe away those clouds and then manifest it. But this is dualistic already. Buddha doesn't mention it that way. Because we are already Buddha. But we always deal that teaching is, we are Buddha, but we are not Buddha. That's why you have to manifest Buddha. In order to manifest the Buddha, you have to practice. Which means wipe away. That's why he says, after the world is obliterated, then you can manifest the truth. That is very common. But this is the real truth, which is vivid and refresh. No. The principle of the nature of the things cannot be like this. So that's why nature of the truth is not like that. Nature of the truth is exactly something alive in your life exactly, every day. But it's very hard to believe this one. Next, this totality of phenomena and the nature of the things are far beyond any question of sameness or difference. But phenomena and it completely real meaning of the truth is not something we should discuss about. Phenomena is the same as truth, or phenomena is different from the truth. Or phenomena is not the different from the truth. All phenomena is not the same as truth. Now, beyond this. So before you experience, it's already there. Exactly. I mentioned obviously if you stand up immediately here, you feel completely unified, peaceful. That means from where peace comes. Perfect unity of you and this nature. But that unity is something before you touch it. Okay? From where the wow comes. That wow comes from perfect unity before you say wow. Otherwise, wow doesn't make sense. Okay? So that he says beyond same and any question of sameness or difference, beyond the talk of distinction or identity. The sameness, the truth is exactly identical with the phenomena. No, it's not something like that. Beyond that one, anyway. It is a different, distinct. Can we distinct extinguish? Can we extinguish between distinguish between the truth and the phenomena? No, you cannot distinguish. You cannot say the phenomena is exactly identical with the truth. You cannot say. Because if you say so, truth is already something dualistic. Okay? So truth is perfectly there, which is fully alive. This is called born knowledge. Something fully alive. And then if you know that, that is called born knowing. It's very alive, living knowledge, so-called wisdom. Okay. But that living wisdom is not something passing through your six senses. No. So that's why it is beyond the perceptions. That is called unknown knowledge. Unborn knowledge. But even though unborn knowledge, it is exist. So this is a born knowing or unborn knowing, okay? So, it is the past, it is not the past, the present, future, the not the annihilation or eternity. In this case, the not means revelation, okay? The truth is a past. Truth is a present. Truth is a future anyway. But why he says it is not past, present, future? Because if I say truth is past, truth is already something different from past. Because truth and the past. But a truth is exactly the past means past is complete beyond concept of the past we have understood. So past is past, but the past is no past. Beyond time. That is a real characteristic of past. Real nature of the past, real nature of the present, real nature of future. That's why your nature is completely open. Eternal possibility there. Okay? If you use your five skandhas with sincerity, your five skandhas show you eternal possibility anyway. But we don't believe it. But it is true. If you do it, your five skandhas show it. Even though you don't want to see it, five skandhas show you how eternal possibility it is. Okay. So that is not past, not present, not future, not annihilation, not eternity. The truth is not annihilation. Because we cannot see it, we cannot perceive it, that's why we say it is annihilation. No. Because it is alive. And we say if it is alive, and also we cannot perceive it, so what is it? It is kind of eternity, which exists forever, beyond our senses. No, it's not something like that. It's already something we conceptualized. So beyond conceptualization, already there is the truth, Dhamma nature there. Not form, not sensation, not conception, conditioning, and consciousness. This is the five skandhas. Form, sensation, conception, conditioning, and consciousness. In Prajnaparamita we say form, the feeling, perception, impulses, consciousness, we say, in a different way. But this is the five skandhas. So not five skandhas means don't accept the five skandhas in terms of your understanding, because your five skandhas is something beyond your conception. Conceptualization of five skandhas which you have accumulated. So we have to see. We have to accept five skandhas just like that. Okay? So because, therefore, it is nature of the thing. This is. That's why at that time, five skandhas are truth. Your nose is truth. Your ears is truth. And annihilation is also truth. Eternity is a truth. Identity is also truth. All are truth. So the next the Dogen Zenji quote in the Basos and Masters and the statement here as a great proof of the truth. As the Dogen Zenji mentions. So the Master Basso said, all living beings for infinite eons have never left absorption in the nature of things. They are always living absorption in the nature of things. Wearing clothes, eating, conversing, the function of the six sense organs and all activities, all are the nature of things. So we are where we are. What we, how, who we are. Who are we? Anyway, we are anyway Dhamma nature, truth. So if we are Dhamma nature, what who we are? We are that Dhamma nature is Dhamma nature. In other words, dominate, we are already soaked, our body. We soaked our body immediately in the function of the dominate. That is called dominate samadhi. Absorption in the nature of samadhi, in the nature of things. So we already absorbed. And 9:30. Okay.